Reading FC doubled up on a defeat to league leaders Brentford with a heavily disappointing loss against Millwall on Saturday, taking 0 points from two games that they both led at the Mad Stad. Welcome to the Tala's Den episode 253, the podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans. I'm your host, Mark Mayo. We've got to talk about two defeats, sadly, after a really good run. To do that with me is the Tala's Den assistant editor, Ollie Allen. How are you, mate?
Yeah, very well, thank you. I'm trying to stay positive after the last week, but we are still inside the top six. That's what I'm clinging on to.
Yeah, it's good to. I feel like when we did the Bournemouth post Bournemouth win podcast straight after the game, and that was brilliant. We were bouncing and everything, but perhaps to do the two defeats, to have taken a little bit of a day off and come back on the Monday morning to talk about that is probably the best way of doing it. Before we get in there, obviously we've got the Brentford and the Millwall game to talk about. Before we do that, big thank you, as always, to the ZCZ Films, our sponsors, and to the Patreon subscribers who continue to help us in little ways and everything like that. And it's really useful to upgrade our technology and everything like that, and to have a what we hope is a relatively decent sounding podcast, if not an intelligent one. So let's get into that sort of analysis now and into the recap.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So where do we start then with Brentford? It's a game that actually looks all right, Ollie, to be honest. Reading came out in this against the team that I think they were second going into it with the game in hand. This was basically their game in hand. If they avoided defeat against us, they were going to go top. 24 minutes in, Lucas Schau gets the penalty won by Josh Laurent, who was having a pretty good game. Just all round, Reading were looking decent, go 1-0 up. And I wonder, we had a couple of chances to make it 2-0. And in that first half, we were certainly the better team, I'd say. But the one-all goal that came just after the half-hour mark, was that perhaps a sucker punch? Was that probably the thing that turned the game on its head?
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of the game that we hoped it would be. We spoke last week about how it could be, or the potential to be a sort of a real high quality game between two really good sides. And it was, it was great to see Reading sort of compete in that sort of game. Brentford clearly one of the best sides in the division, despite their defeat to Barnsley yesterday. But yeah, obviously, when they go 1-0 down, they were always going to rally. I think they beat Middlesbrough 4-1. The previous weekend, having gone a goal down. So they were always going to rally, especially with the amount of attacking quality in their side. I don't think one goal was ever going to be enough to beat them. So, yeah, it was a superb sort of strike from De Silva for the equaliser. And, it was pretty similar for all three goals, really, that sort of there wasn't really an awful lot that Reading could do about it. You could probably point out Raphael for the third goal, parrying it right into the path of Ivan Toney. But I think in general, we just sort of saw why Brentford, may well be in the Premier League next season. I'd be massively surprised not to see them there based off what we saw last Wednesday. They're clearly a very, very well-drilled side. Thomas Frank has been sort of building this project for the last sort of two or so years now, and they look really, really clinical. They only have five shots or something, but they score from three of them. So yeah, they're a top side, and ultimately, I think you can't really have too many complaints. Reading gave it their best shot. As I say, they certainly weren't outplayed by Brentford. It was ultimately a case of the pressure told in the final 5 minutes, but they gave as good as they got, really, I think. And I think it was a performance, despite the result, that we could be proud of, I think.
Yeah, and that's the thing, as you say, five shots, the Reading only conceded in five shots, I suppose, if you flip that round, is a good way of putting it. We only shot eight times ourselves. Both teams were very much the quality over the quantity in terms of their attacks. And to be fair, Reading, in terms of shots, Reading had a few attacks they made where they didn't get a shot off in the end. And perhaps this is where I thought Reading were going to get a chance to have a go at Brentford, is in their defence. But the defence was top quality. There was a chance on Omar Richards, put the ball across in the first half, and Lucas Schau was just kind of shepherded away from getting a chance. Another one that Zhao got 1-on-1, brilliant slide tackle from Ethan Pinnock from behind to get the ball and deny him that. And I suppose that, we'll talk about the attack in a little bit, but I felt like this performance was, it was a case of, if we play like that again, then we'll be fine. Yeah, before we talk about the Millwall game, that the second goal, were there any complaints for as Brentford went 2-1 up? I think what minute was it? Is in the 86th minute, Reading were 1-1 until De Silva scored. And again, were there any complaints with that one? Perhaps slightly slow to close the ball down. You know, the ball finds two men in the box kind of unmarked. Was it just a good routine or Reading kind of flat-footed?
Yeah, possibly. I'm sort of loath to criticise anyone really. I mean just on sort of that five shots conceded statistic, I think that's one of the lowest shot tallies that Brentford have had in a game all season. So you know, that's credit to Reading for limiting to that. The second goal, I think it's almost a bit of a hit and hope that the cross, I'm not sure who it comes from, but it almost looks to be sort of going way out of play, and sort of Ivan Toney keeps it alive at the back post, and obviously again it's just a hell of a strike from De Silva. He just sort of smashes it, and no chance for Raphael. I think it's Sonny Aluko and Michael Aliso sort of closest to the crosser, so you're not going to really expect either of those two players to sort of close it down. But yeah, not really too many complaints. Obviously, you know, once that second goal goes in, Reading, you know, sort of try and get equalised again, and then sort of a punished again, as I say, perhaps a slight error on Raphael's part for parrying it into Tony's path. But yeah, I think in the end, sort of just hold, and you know, you can't really have too many complaints when sort of you know, De Silva smashing that ball in and Tony's getting tapping. So yeah, it was frustrating, of course it was, but I think, as I say, it wasn't a bad performance at all.
Yeah, no, it's definitely worth saying that. And I felt that Tony had been kept completely out of the game for 86 minutes, and he's supposedly the best striker, or one of the best strikers in the Championship. So to do that was good, and it was I was readying a tweet of being kept in the back pocket of our defence until the 86th minute when he set up, and then set up the 2-1, then scored the 3-1. So yeah, 3-1 defeat, as we say. And you know, we go into the Millwall game looking ahead of the Millwall game, or looking at the Millwall game from earlier in the week. I was seeing that there were stats that Reading had won 9 of their last 12 home games against Millwall. Reading had won 6 of their last home Championship games on a Saturday, and 3 in a row before the Millwall game. Millwall hadn't won consecutive league games since October. Millwall are a good team, but it's almost a terrible situation, therefore, to find yourself going into a game thinking, yeah, we should win this. As Reading fans, we've kind of gifted ourselves that right this year. And really, certainly on the first half, Reading didn't start too dangerously. Got a good goal. Alpha Semedo picking up the ball from 40 yards out. Some hesitant Millwall playing, and you know, just really well picking up the shot that perhaps the goalkeeper gave up on a bit too early. But from 1-0 against Millwall at home, semi on top, really, I think it's kind of unforgivable that Reading didn't close it out. And I wonder why you thought. Why was the reason that Reading didn't close it out? Was it because we couldn't make it 2-0, or was the defending for the two goals that came late in the game not enough?
Yeah, I mean, it's lucky we didn't tweet out those stats before the game, because we'd have jinxed the result even more, I think, if that had happened. But yeah, it was a disappointing one. I don't think you can avoid that point. I think, especially, you know, off the back of that Brentford performance, there was certainly the sort of expectation that Reading would get the win, and especially, as you say, against the Millwall side, who have been pretty inconsistent this season, who were sitting, still are sitting mid-table going into that game. You know, yes, they haven't lost too many, but they've also not won very many either. You know, they draw an awful lot of the game. I think they've drawn the most games in the division. But yeah, it was a really, really frustrating one. And as you say, you know, got that sort of goal. A slight slice of luck. I'm still not sort of convinced whether Alpha Semedo actually meant it. Almost looked as if he was going for sort of a tackle and just trying to clear it, and it's ended up going in the back of the net. But I mean, if he meant it, then fair play to him. But yeah,
there was, for me, I felt there was strong Peter Whittingham Cardiff. I can't remember what year it was. I think it was probably 2010-11. Peter Whittingham produced a ridiculously good goal from about 40 yards.
Yeah,
against Reading in that year, and it was kind of like you felt like he was barreling. He took the momentum into the ball to get the man, kind of, as well. Was obviously going for the ball, but it just kind of all came together, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I would point out that Peter Whittingham was a fantastically skillful player. I'm not sure I particularly credit Alfred Semedo with that sort of attribute, but I mean, if he meant it, then fair play to him. Yeah, then Reading, I mean, they had a couple of chances. I think we hit the bar second half with Ejaria, and Ejaria had a penalty shot as well. But in general, we didn't really sort of do enough to close the game out, and then ultimately were sort of punished for it. I don't think we particularly deserved to lose the game. I don't think Millwall were, you know, particularly better than Reading on the day, but I certainly think sort of on the balance of play, you know, we couldn't really have much of a case to win it either. We didn't really go for it. And I think, you know, Millwall, you know, you know what you're going to get when you play Millwall. They're a tough team to play. As I say, they draw a lot of their games. They're not beaten easily. So they're sort of the sort of stereotypical Championship side that you're going to face. They're going to give you a good game. They're not going to make it easy for you. And sort of Reading couldn't really deal with that. I mean, I'm not really sure why, whether sort of the Brentford game took it out of them on Wednesday and it didn't really have the energy. You know, Lucas Joao looked knackered, I have to say, and he didn't really have a sniff all afternoon. And, you know, certainly sort of missing John Swift again didn't help. Obviously, Renamata played in the 10, which I'm sure we'll talk about, and didn't have too much of an impact. And yeah, ultimately, you know, it comes down to, you know, bad defending, perhaps a slice of luck in sort of the way that the goals come about, with sort of a lucky bounce with the second one and the first one. The ball, you know, just about makes its way through to Matt Smith, but the defending wasn't great for either goal. You know, I'm sure some people will point to the Tom Holmes substitution, and obviously, you know, it's certainly a coincidence, if nothing else, that the two goals come almost straight after Tom Holmes goes off. I'm not convinced entirely by that theory myself. I think it probably played a part, just because you don't really want to be disrupting that back four, and it sort of seemed to be quite settled. But certainly, I don't think you can pin all of the blame for the defeat on that sub, because, you know, we have no idea sort of whether Tom Holmes would have closed the ball down or sort of done any better than Andy Eardom in that situation, and it sort of glosses over and sort of gives a free pass really to the rest of the team, who weren't really at the races at all. They were quite lacklustre, didn't really create too many chances, and ultimately, when you don't do that, you sort of, you know, leave yourself open, especially when you're only 1-0 up. You leave yourself open for Millwall to get back in the game, and they did just that. So it was just a very disappointing, I think, especially, you know, off the back of the performance on Wednesday against Brentford. It was very, very disappointing to see Reading neither perform on the pitch or even get the result. So yeah, not the best afternoon.
Yeah, we'll talk about the kind of you know, the individual performances. Renamata and Holmes and Swift and people all talked about in the mailbag. So I'll let the fans, as it were, kind of prompt us for that. But what I would say, kind of on an overarching scale, is that Reading had a problem with scoring goals under Paul Clement, under Jose Gomez, under Mark Bowen, and they still have a problem, I think, scoring goals under Veljko Paunovic. And part of it is, not a large part of it, but part of it is Paunovic in his substitutions. He didn't make any kind of attacking changes. If I agree that Lucas Joao was, he didn't have a good week, really. And he, taking him off for Sam Baldock or, you know, Sonny Luca, or just doing something and getting some fresh legs in there, was something that Paunovic just didn't do. And in terms of scoring goals, I think Reading have a serious problem in carrying their attacking momentum through a game. I don't know whether this stat has been shared before, Ollie, but do you know how many times Reading have scored in both halves of a game in the last like few weeks or so? And it's once in the last 14 games Reading have scored in both halves. And I just find, I don't know, I've not gone in deep enough to know whether that's particularly unusual, but it feels to me like a really low tally of times when you've got in both halves. Obviously, the Bournemouth game, you know, when you're 3-0 up at half-time, it's not so much of a problem. But I feel like this is the sort of game that we needed to go and get a second goal in. In terms of the attack, Paunovic obviously doesn't trust not that he has to trust Baldock and Aluko, for example, but he just doesn't trust those players enough, and this is a game where I think we kind of paid for that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I suppose it brings up sort of the debate of whether we should have dipped into the transfer market in January to sort of try and bring in reinforcements, because, you know, I do sympathise with them a bit, because Sam Baldock and Sonny Aluko, yes, they might work hard, but really they're not the sort of players you want to bring in and sort of trust you to get a goal, you know, sort of in the final 10 minutes or so. And yeah, it's just a frustrating one. I think, you know, that's a really interesting one, and certainly also the one about set pieces. I think only Cardiff have scored more goals from set pieces in the Championship this season. And sort of Reading's sort of go-to routine, I suppose, if you like, is sort of just try and get the ball to Lucas Joao and see what he can do. And I think, you know, we had that one chance where Michael Olise had a fantastic bit of skill and then played a superb through ball to Lucas Joao, and then Bilakowski makes a pretty good save. But in the end, you know, it was, as I say, a very quiet afternoon for Lucas Joao. And ultimately, you know, if it almost seems as if when Lucas Joao is not performing, then Reading don't really perform. I think I saw Talk Reading share I'm not sure the exact numbers, but something on the lines of, you know, in a game where I think Saturday was one of the first games that Reading had scored in, but Lucas Joao hadn't scored in, if that makes sense. And that sort of shows you how, you know, important it is that when Joao is on form, Reading are on form. So, yeah, a very frustrating day overall. And I think we are, you know, beginning to see perhaps a few flaws in Panovic's game. Certainly the substitutes sort of conundrum seems to be playing with him. You know, you can talk about the home sub and whatnot, but certainly sort of the lack of options and the lack of trust he has in those players on the bench does seem to be a problem, especially when, you know, Swift is out, Mate's out, Puskas is out. You know, he's not really got too many options to turn to. So, yeah, it's going to be a long rest of the season. I think we're going to get results like this again. I mean, we're not going to win every game, but, you know, I've got confidence that, you know, hopefully we'll see a lot more sort of performance-wise of the sort of performance we saw against Brentford than the one we saw against Millwall.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully, you know, if we can repeat that Brentford performance, I'm convinced that we'll beat teams like Millwall. And that's easier said than done, but it certainly is how we have to look at it, I think. Well, let's hear from Veljko Panovic then and hear what he said after the Millwall game, and then we'll be back with your questions in the mailbag.
It's a tough defeat. I think we started very well the game. I also believe that the team put the effort out there. We definitely had opportunities that we had to convert in order to increase the advantage, which is very important in this kind of games. Millwall is a tough team to play. They always come consistently with their style. We knew and we were prepared for what was coming. So I believe throughout the whole game until we conceded the goal, we were doing a good job. Unfortunately, with the first goal, with that deflection, we lost our shape and we started to rush. It was performance that we are not proud of. It wasn't an easy game for us, and even with the draw, I think we created opportunities to take the lead again. We missed them, and again, those executions are crucial in this part of the season.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
So you can always get in touch with the Tala Stem podcast through the mailbag for the Twitter and the Facebook. And if you can, you know, want to send in your thoughts on the Gmail, that is the talhurstend@gmail.com. And Alan Scott has done just that. And he says, after the Brentford game, what a great match, 2 points. Was it a mistake not to play Holmes after so many clean sheets? And we need to get more shots on target. Brentford probably had 2 more shots, and look at the difference in the final score. Be braver and get more shots off Reading. And this is, I suppose it's difficult to pin Panovic down to a sort of style, but in terms of getting the shots off and everything, it does feel to me like we do go, you know, we do have players who do hit it from long, and Michael Lisa will hit it from range, Zhao will take a pot from 20 yards. But I suppose because, you know, Panovic, he'll change the amount of, you know, counter to possession that we have based, you know, based on the opposition, I think. But is it a problem that Reading aren't getting enough shots off, particularly, you know, in these tight games where, you know, you've got players like Elisa, you may as well just have a crack from 25 yards every now and again, because those players are pretty decent at doing so.
Yeah, I've just looked at the stats, and Reading have an average of 10.7 shots per game, which ranks them 15th in the Championship. The same number as Coventry. I mean, it's not a particular correlation. I mean, Norwich are top with 15.9, but then Swansea only have 10.1 and they're third. So there's not a particular correlation. And, you know, you look at someone like Rotherham, who rank 8th in that table, and Forest are 9th with 11.4. So there's no particular correlation. But yeah, I mean, I suppose that the old adage is that, you know, if you don't shoot, you don't score. And, you know, we saw sort of Brentford being, as Alan says, Brentford being particularly clinical on Wednesday, and that's because they have the players to do that. You know, Ivan Toney scored, what, 18, 19 goals in Championship this season, now I think possibly more than that. But Reading themselves, as they say, have that player in Lucas Joao, and as I say, it seems to be that if Joao plays well, then Reading play well, and there's certainly a be a incentive to get the ball to Lucas Joao. But when he's not firing, Reading clearly struggles. So, yeah, you're right in saying there's sort of no clear, defined style of play, and that does perhaps hamper Reading, the fact that they're not always going to score the same sort of goal. We do rely heavily on set pieces, it would seem. But yeah, I suppose I would like to see perhaps trying to be a bit more creative and sort of trying to get shots away.
Yeah, there is that. As I say, there's just that. There is that potential that it'd be like nice for Reading to make use of. But yeah, I think it's going to vary game per game. And the Brentford game, you're up against a good defence. They're not going to give you too much. And to end up with the tally that we had, I think it's probably not quite the reason that we lost the game. Alistair saying, what was the reason for the Millwall loss? Was it mentally knowing that we put so much into the Brentford game and didn't get anything from it? Is it fatigue, Lauren, and sometimes Joao looks shattered, but we can't bring them out for a game because of injuries? Was it the subs? Josh Laurent, yeah, I wrote in the match report on the tylersen.com that it was his worst game for Reading on the weekend, but I'm not going to pinpoint him down for that because there is quite a good chance that it was fatigue. I suppose, Ollie, we're finding that. You mentioned the transfer window earlier. I look back to that 2011-12 season when Reading put on that amazing run towards the end of the year. And players like Hayden Mullins came in. I think he only played about five games. Ben Akafobi came in and played like four games maybe, but just took the edge off. Is it a kind of a recruitment failing? Obviously, we've got, there's money and all sorts of stuff, but is it perhaps a recruitment failing that we haven't been able to, in the last, not just January, but in the last 18 months, probably haven't really been able to build out a squad? Or is it maybe even the academy? Is it those sort of players that we need to put more trust in? Players like Jade Nonan, Dejan Tetek on the bench. Is it about time that Paunovic actually just kind of trusted one of those and just said, you know what, we're 1-0 up against Millwall with 20 minutes to go, put Dejan Tetek on for a clearly knackered Josh Laurent and see what happens? Because I suppose if we never do that, we'll never actually find out if these young players are good enough to fill that hole.
For sure. I think recruitment seems to be sort of the key word for all of Reading's problems over the last sort of 3-4 years. But we also had a very packed squad last year and the last sort of 2-3 years, really, and that's always sort of been a problem for Reading because you've got senior players sitting on the bench or not even getting in the squad. And, it was one thing that was sort of amended over last summer and sort of, 11 or 12 first team players left. And, it's been a very tight knit squad this season. And that certainly has played to Reading's advantage because, it's been able to foster this fantastic team spirit that is often spoken about. And certainly having this small squad has helped Reading in certain areas. But, undoubtedly, when you get into this latter half of the season now, we've spoken about it a lot that you are. Going to get injuries. That's part and parcel of the game. And Reading squads is beginning to struggle to cope. Obviously we can't buy anyone out in now into the season. I know Paunovic has almost pretty much written off bringing in any free agents. So yeah, you're going to have to turn to the academy. And I agree. I think there's no harm in trying. As you say, that if you don't try, you won't know. We've always, Paunovic has put, tons of academy players on the bench in sort of the last 2-3 months, but not really brought any of them on. I think Jaden Nolan came on against Norwich. Most of the time, he always sort of turned to the same players on the bench, whether that's Semedo, whether that's Baldock or Aluko. But ultimately, you've got to ask the question, Sam Baldock and Sean Aluko aren't doing an awful lot when they come on. Surely there's no harm in, putting the home Mervyn Lambert on, desperate to get a goal, I'm sure, and surely can't do any. Well, I say can't do any worse than Baldock. That sounds harsh on Sam Baldock, but there's got to come a point where you've got to just say you're not going to get anything from Sam Baldock in the final 10 minutes of the game, and Nahum Mervyn Lambert has got to be worth a chance. So yeah, I think the fatigue point is a fair one. The fixtures are coming thick and fast now, and certainly on Saturday, Reading had obviously played in midweek, whereas Millwall hadn't. So, Millwall had several more days preparation time. So, yeah, it's a tough one. And certainly the small squad is could come back to bite Reading at some point. You've just got to hope that sort of key players like Puskás and Mate come back. And then hopefully that might start to ease.
Well, Sam Baldock hasn't scored a goal in 706 minutes of football this year, so or this season. So you can argue that it necessarily can't be any worse than that, because that's a pretty shocking record for an experienced Championship striker who has won promotion with other teams. So, yeah, I'd probably say that's the one thing. I don't think this team is particularly poor for fitness. I don't think it's poor for, you know, the necessary level of quality in the starting 11. But that is probably the one thing that I would say that could potentially be missing at the moment, is that trust of the academy. And certainly at times Reading fans have been probably culpable for being a bit sentimental towards the academy, but this is purely a factual evidence technical decision, because the players needed a rest on Saturday. They didn't get it, and we conceded two late goals. So maybe not the exact reason why, but certainly a plausible thing to have done instead. Okay, let's move on then with Jack Killick, who's saying if Semedo, Lauren and Rinomata start in the midfield, who should play centre attacking midfield? Didn't think Rinomata in that position worked very well against Millwall. We're in that situation, are we best off moving Elise into that spot and starting Aluko? He also says, do you think we set up to try and counteract Millwall rather than playing our normal style? Feels like we tried to beat them at their own game and that's why we lost. Also on that note, Ben Greenwood saying, thoughts on Rinomata as the number 10 with Semedo deep? Was that the best option with the squad available? Feel it worked relatively well. Rhino had a lot of energy running through, but ultimately we lost. I think, firstly, the only thing I'd say on Semedo being deeper is it certainly suits him better and probably was the reason he scored the goal, which I suppose is, you know, probably not the exact reason why he got put in that position, but certainly helps. With Rinomata then, Ollie, the theory was really sound for putting him as that player. I think probably works better in games where Reading are going to be defending deeper from the start. You know, the counter-attack option, someone like Rinomata can carry the ball really well. You know, he can put a pass with a shot in, and he certainly, you know, he's got that energy. But in terms of the raw creative element, yeah, I don't think Semedo is particularly brilliant at it either, but the case for starting someone like Aluko in front of him, or maybe even just swapping the system around and not having a number 10 and having three deeper central midfielders and more emphasis on the wings is perhaps bigger. And I think it's probably a thing I'm happy to stick with for now when Amosa was number 10, but it's not a long-term solution.
No, absolutely not. I think that's the thing. I think the creativity is the key thing there. You know, Rinomata's got four goals, five assists in 105 games for Reading, which isn't the best return. You do want to be playing him as that number 10. I agree. I think that the logic did sort of make sense. I think he probably, you know, fit better there than Alpha Semedo. You know, he's a high energy player. He can carry the ball well. But yeah, that creativity, you know, certainly was lacking. But it did allow Alpha Semedo, who I always thought was a defensive midfielder. I was a bit surprised when he sort of filled in at Cam early in the season. It certainly suited him better. Yeah, it certainly sort of highlights the problem of missing John Swift, of missing Yaku Mato, who would play on the right wing and then push Elise into the Cam spot. So yeah, it's obviously a conundrum that the panel has got to think about. I wouldn't be averse to sort of, you know, seeing whether you could play Aluko on the right and then pushing Elise into the middle. But again, then how much does Shoni Aluko really give you, either Rinomata or Semedo? So it's a really tough one. As I say, I think hopefully Yaku Mate is not too far away from full fitness, and then he can go out on the right and Elise can slot in the middle. But you know, certainly at the moment it is costing Reading, because there's no one sort of sitting behind Lucas Schau that can, you know, create an awful lot. You know, we're still relying on Michael Elise and Ovi Ejaria from the wings to, you know, play through balls and to get the ball upfield. So it's fine for now, but certainly not a long-term solution having Rinomata in that number 10.
I also think that with Elise being in the centre, perhaps it's his youth, perhaps it is because he's not the biggest lad. I do think that there's the worry that he gets swallowed up in that kind of midfield battle more than like a Rinomata or Semedo would. And therefore, him being on the wing does give him a bit more space to kind of cut inside and play those three balls in. That's certainly what we've seen the last couple of weeks. And Paunovic, he's not been very happy to play him central. And maybe that's where Elise's long-term future is. But for now, I certainly think there is perhaps an argument or a thought taking place in the Reading camp that he just gets a bit, you know, out-muscled, perhaps is the word, in that central role. So we'll see if he gets moved in. Alan West-Westy, got plenty of friends of the podcast on mailing in this week saying, will our lack of squad depth ultimately cost us at the end of the season? Or will continuity mean we are stronger come the final games? That continuity argument is an interesting one. Reading, you know, that back six, you know, probably Yeardom and Moore pending as to whether they get put on or not. But it's a pretty solid back line. We saw Lewis Gibson coming at left back on the weekend. I think that was basically Omar Richards being rested. But other than that, it's been very much the same back six for pretty much the entirety of the season, which has its benefits. But in terms of the continuity thing, when it gets to, you know, the last three games of the season, if Reading need a couple of points to get in the playoffs or, you know, in the playoffs themselves, you'd hope that it would be a benefit. Perhaps you might, you don't really want to go into the playoffs, do you, not knowing your best 11, I suppose, is one way of putting it.
No, for sure. I mean, the easy way to look at it is that, you know, you look at the 05-06 side and the 11-12 side, and you can pinpoint, you know, their first 11s pretty easily. You know, there'd be a few players that might come in here and there, but generally it was a pretty settled starting lineup. And, you know, as I said earlier, you know, it's certainly a good thing from the small squad that Reading don't have that many options, because you are getting that continuity. But ultimately, you know, this is a season that is going to have more games packed into a tight schedule, you know, like number four. You know, the season started over a month later, so there's lots of games to fit into a small space of time. So injuries are undoubtedly going to play a part, and that's, you know, potentially one area where Reading might get unstuck. You know, if Lucas Schell gets injured again, you know, we've spoken so often, you know, about who's going to replace him. You know, we've seen that, you know, the lack of Swift or Mata in that attacking three, you know, has, you know, what happens if Josh Laurent or Renamota gets injured? You know, what happens if, you know, any of the back four get injured? So it is tough, but I think we'll have to wait and see. I think it's certainly a good thing that you can have that same starting 11, but, you know, you mentioned earlier, you know, Mafobe and Mullins coming in 11-12. Sometimes you just sort of need those players who can fill in here and there to give others a rest.
Yeah, well, so one player who's certainly going to be getting a good old rest in the next few weeks is John Swift. Ben Thomas saying, how much of a blow is having Swift out again? Aside from Semedo in that role, who else could feasibly do it, as we just spoke about? Sandwich is saying, please, can you set the John Swift is always injured straight for so many who don't seem to want to deal in facts? He said, well, I'll let you, Ollie, you have more of an idea as to how, what exactly has been keeping John Swift out, but basically the headline figure is that he's out for 6 more weeks, I believe it is, with a hamstring injury. He had a hamstring injury early in the season. As you can see, if you want to talk us through Sam's sort of statistics that he sent over to us.
Yeah, so Sam's sort of given us some stats on sort of the amount of games that Swift has played in each of his campaigns for Reading. 36 appearances in 16-17, 24 apps in 17-18, 34 in 18-19, and 41 last season. And yeah, they're certainly not sort of bad numbers. You know, that's, you know, 17-18 aside, you know, that's sort of, you know, at least sort of two-thirds, three-quarters of Reading games. But yeah, I'm sort of torn on John Swift, because, you know, yes, there's this sort of talk that he's always injured, and, you know, I do sort of tend to agree. You know, I know Sam's put those stats there, but I was looking this morning at sort of the amount of time that John Swift has missed, and sort of he missed a month of 16-17 with an ankle injury. He missed 4 months total of 17-18 with 5 separate hamstring injuries throughout the campaign. He missed the final month of the season in 18-19 after having hip surgery. Last season was actually his best season injury-wise, in terms of he only missed 2 weeks with an unspecified injury. I'd guess that's probably a hamstring, because that's certainly what he seems to have the most trouble with. And obviously he's missed 3 months of this season so far, and he's set to miss at least another 6. So yeah, it's certainly not true to say that he's always injured, but he's missed a portion of each of his campaigns at Reading, you know, with an injury. And sort of last season aside, it's been at least a month. You know, that's not a great record, I have to say. You know, certainly it seems he's got a pretty major problem with his hamstring. That seems to be quite a recurring thing for him. And it's not, he's certainly injured more than most other players. It's probably harsh to say that he's always injured in the, you know, vein of someone like Jim Carrigan, but, you know, he's not always there when Reading need him. I think that's sort of highlighted, you know, we talk about the influence of Swift quite a lot, and sort of how much Reading missing when he's not there, and that probably sort of exaggerates the amount of time that we think he's out for. But it is just frustration, really. I think that, you know, he was really sort of finding his groove again after coming back from his three-man injury, and now he's out again for at least 6 weeks, and Reading will certainly miss him. So it's a really frustrating one for him, I'm sure, more than anybody else. But it's a frustrating one as well for Reading, because they're missing a very, very key player.
Yeah, I mean, Sam calls it a myth that he's always injured, and I suppose the thing is that it's just, as you mentioned, though, it's when Reading need him that perhaps is when he's been out more. He missed portions of that 2017 playoff season, which maybe has actually been one of his better seasons since he's been at the club, and he's obviously missed a lot of this season. Being fit last season when Reading won the way to mid-table finish perhaps isn't going to feature in fans' minds as much. So I guess it's just one of those things, but ultimately, you know, dealing in the present, he is out for the next 6 weeks. And I think, March, they're kind of talking about him coming back. I think that no one's really expected back until towards the end of the month. So there's no, you know, don't expect any more Puskás or anything to be emerging soon. Yaku Mate as well, I think he's out until about March. So, this is kind of the squad that Reading have for the next fortnight or so, at least. Sean Burgess, he puts in his thing there. Thoughts on Tom Holmes? Obviously, we can all see he's had a number of really good games, but he is a much more important part of our defence than he realised. Also says that he's my bestest bird. I've never met the bloke, to be honest. Then Dave McCormack saying Holmes. Whole hour given to why he's better than Yeardom. I'm just joking, John. The thing is, this ill-fated substitution, wasn't it, that Paunovic made. I'm just going to quickly check on what exact minute it was, but basically just before the collapse against Millwall, Tom Holmes had a pretty decent game at right back. I certainly wouldn't say he did anything wrong. Taken off on the 76th minute, so just before the 1-1 goal. And really, I mean, for me, I felt the tactical thing that Paunovic missed was that he should have put Yeardom at right wing and taken off an Elise or someone like that, or taken off Lauren or whatever, and then just put Yeardom to bulk up that flank and kept Holmes on. Because Holmes had done nothing wrong to earn being subbed off. But even so, Yeardom coming on, I don't think he played badly. He didn't play badly against Brentford. He brings more attacking stuff, or more of an attacking sense than Holmes does. And I think he's a really good player. It's a brilliant thing that we have both of these right-backs, even with Thomas Esteves, to back up as a third choice. So I feel like the substitution was kind of lampooned a little bit too much. As you know, Sean says, thoughts on Tom Holmes. He's a very good player. We've got a very good right back who came on for him, and ultimately, I don't think it really was the reason that we lost the Millwall game.
I've got sort of no complaints in Yeardom himself coming on. You know, probably could have come on, as you say, for perhaps an attacking player, and maybe gone for a back three with Holmes moving to centre back, and then Yeardom at right wing back. I agree. I don't think we should place as much emphasis as perhaps has been put on the substitution. Look, I think based off the timing, you know, you can't say it played no part at all. You know, it clearly sort of disrupted that back line, and you know, whether Yeardom could have got closer to his marker for the first goal, or sort of closed down the cross better for the second. You know, who knows whether Tom Holmes would have done either of those things better. You know, it's all hypothetical. It certainly did disrupt the back line, but as I say, earlier in the show, that you can't place too much emphasis on that, and it certainly takes the attention away from the fact that in general Reading were quite lacklustre and sort of lacked a lot of energy throughout the pitch, and you know, not just at right back. So it's a fairly easy sort of solution to blame it on that, and it did play a part. But yeah, I think it's a bit harsh just to blame it completely on that substitution.
Yeah, I think it's more the lack of attacking subs, as we talked about earlier in the show. But it'll be interesting to see who starts against Bristol City on Tuesday night. I'd honestly not mind if either of them play. I think Tom Holmes has had I was very happy that he was given a chance, but I must admit that when he came in at the start of the season, I wasn't convinced that he was going to be, you know, a first-choice player. And certainly with Tom McIntyre coming through, then Lewis Gibson, you kind of, who was going to be the man left out? Turns out it was Lewis Gibson, the lonely left out. I suppose that's probably the best option for Reading going forward. And Holmes has had a brilliant season. It's certainly not over yet. And, you know, whether Paunovic wants to keep rotating them or keep moving them around, I think, you know, both of them are adequate players, certainly. Final question then, mailbag. I'm kind of worried that we're going to get no questions this week. So thanks, everyone, for messaging in. It's been certainly a lot of really good topics brought up. Laura Wall saying, will the real Reading step forward? We've come a long way. What do we want to see in this run-in? What do we want to avoid, such as a 7-1 defeat at Norwich? He says, I would like us to avoid these occasional backward steps, but they do happen. Here's to the playoff final. Do you agree? And I wrote in my match report after the Millwall game that we are in danger of limping across the finish line. Reading teams have done that quite a few times in its history, and it's really not a good way of going into the playoffs. So I'd love to delve into stats and tell you whether that completely rules you out, but I don't think it really does you any favours. Certainly, the one stat that I would say, Ollie, we're kind of a bit too far out of the run-in to look at the fixtures we got left for me at the moment, but the stat that I'm worried about is that since November the 2nd, so this doesn't include only the seven in eight wins we had at the start of the season, but since then, Reading are 11th in the Championship with 7 wins from 20, 8 defeats. That's 4 points off the team that are actually 5th in that sort of mini league since the 2nd of November, 3 points off of Bournemouth, who sacked their manager based on the period that they'd had since then. And that just kind of shows that aside from, obviously you've got to include season as a whole, but aside from that amazing run at the start, Reading have really, you've got to say that they've dropped off to a large extent. We know they're going to drop off to some extent, but it has been a little bit alarming. 7 wins, 5 draws and 8 defeats in our last 20 league games with a -3 goal difference. We need to turn this around. If we're going to make it to the playoffs, I think we relatively confident we will. The gap back to 7th is still 8 points. But if we make it to playoffs, we're not going to win them if we go in on a mid-table form run.
Yeah, look, I think it's sort of very easy to be alarmed sort of on the back of 2 defeats, especially a very disappointing defeat to Millwall. But yeah, look, I'm still pretty confident that we'll get into the top 6. I think it would be, an almighty drop-off if we didn't. We're on 48 points now, and I think roughly is it about 75, 80 odd points to secure a safe playoff spot. That's sort of 10 more wins from the final 17 games. It's slightly worrying that the Reading aren't particularly consistent, and that's what perhaps is sort of in the back of my mind is why we perhaps won't win the playoffs. But we don't win the playoff anyway, so that might not make any difference. But I've seen enough from this side this season that they can, beat the good teams. We've beaten Watford, we've beaten Bournemouth. We've got a decent 0-0 draw against Swansea. Yes, we've lost to Brentford twice, but certainly on Wednesday we played pretty well. There's enough in this Reading team that says that we are able to compete. And look, you have to look at the table as it is now. We're 29 games. Nearly 2/3 of the way through the season now. That Reading are in this place for a reason. Sometimes it perhaps is hard to accept. And yes, take away that start of the season, it doesn't look so good, but you have to take the season as a whole. And Reading are, 8 points clear of 7th place. It's a position that we never even sort of dreamt of being in at the start of the campaign. And look, even after the dip in form we had sort of over November, I think we even dropped out of the playoffs for a couple of weeks back then. But they recovered really, really well. As I say, they're now 8 points clear of 7th. So we know that this Reading team can respond to 2 defeats. Hopefully that starts on Tuesday against Bristol City. But they're not like the Reading teams of years gone by, where they will crumble when a goal goes in. Yes, we've the last 2 games we've lost after going in front, but in general, this Reading team has shown me personally enough that they are good enough to be in contention for that top 6.
No, they are absolutely. I think it's perhaps in my mind, when we're talking about those of us who are maybe a little bit more disappointed by that recent run, perhaps it's a victim of their own success sort of mentality that's creeping in to Reading a little bit. Thinking a really brief tangent, but thinking long-term, when we played teams like Brentford this year, does kind of lead me towards, we'll talk about the futures of people like Elise and Richards maybe leaving the club at the end of the season and the money and everything like that, but is kind of leaning me towards the most realistic scenario of being, if we do lose in the playoffs this year, to be in that kind of Brentford and Swansea team next year, where we are actually, you know, pushing towards the automatic places. And I don't know what you think about that, Ollie, but maybe that is perhaps the most realistic and also good outcome that Reading fans can maybe lean towards at the moment.
I think you have to, you know, look at Brentford as a perfect example, and sort of, as I say, see what Thomas Frank has been building over the last couple of years. You know, they narrowly missed out 2 years ago, and you know, obviously then got to the playoff final and came in incredibly close last year, and are now sort of far and away one of the best sides in the league. You know, of course, and sort of in the back of my mind, I'll think back to 16-17, and obviously we lost the playoff final and then completely flopped the following season, and Stam's project was thrown out the window, and so we were back to square one. And there's always going to be that fear, I suppose, that if we don't take our chance this season, then when will we? And, you know, and certainly sort of behind the scenes, there'll always be question marks over the financial situation, that, you know, certainly promotion would be, you know, hugely financially beneficial for Reading, if nothing else, this season, and we'll sort out sort of the problems they have with FFP. So there's certainly a worry that if we don't go up this season, then, you know, we might sort of go back to square one next year. But I think we're in a better place, I hope, than we were sort of 4 years ago. Understand where we've got these young players coming through, that there seems to be sort of more of a team spirit, perhaps. You know, we obviously lost Al-Habsi and Williams in that summer, and hopefully, you know, we wouldn't lose too many players. Obviously, Richard seems like he's probably off, and at least they would probably go. So there's always going to be sort of ifs, buts and maybes. But yeah, as I say, Brentford are the prime example that you can sort of build over the course of a couple of seasons. And I think we probably have to hope that that's the route that Reading would go down, as opposed to the route that Yapstown went.
Well, yeah, I suppose my final point on this is that it is nice that we are talking about this rather than talking about how we're going to beat a relegation drop next season. So that is maybe we will be talking about a relegation fight next season in the Premier League. Who knows? But yeah, that just shows that there's plenty to discuss and to be excited about, hopefully, for Reading over not just this season, but the seasons coming as well, which is absolutely refreshing. Let's jump on to News Bites then and round up what's been going on around the club this week.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
As Ollie kind of touched on then, the reports are basically that Omar Richards' move at the end of the season to Bayern Munich on effectively a free transfer is basically done. It's still reports at the moment, so I'll kind of hold off from having loads of discussion about it. We've talked about it a lot the last few weeks anyway, but we'll see if that gets confirmed. Basically, I guess we'll see at the end of the season. But otherwise, the news bites basically going through the other teams in the Reading FC umbrella this week. And the women's team have had a pretty decent week, to be fair. They're 4-1 now. Natasha Harding and Daniel Carter scoring a 2-0 win at Man United last weekend. Then a 1-1 draw at home to Everton. Rachel Rose scoring before a late equaliser. So Everton and Reading still deadlocked 5th and 6th. So almost a win, but still unbeaten. So a good, hopefully a good end of the season on the cards there for the women's team. The under-23s play Leeds on Monday, then Stoke on Friday. So we'll update you with that over the course of the week. Keep an eye on the social media for that. And the under-18s play Chelsea on the 20th. So the game's coming thick and fast then for the first team, seniors in the, well, the men's first team at least. So let's go and talk about that now in Big Match Preview with a game on Tuesday night.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals. So be loud and be proud for the Big Match Preview.
Bristol City away, Ashton Gate, 7:45 p.m. on Tuesday, the 16th of February. Pretty sure that's a Sky Sports red button game. Obviously on the iFollow as well. And this is, oh God, Ollie, this is just, again, as I said, when you go to that Millwall game after the Brentford game thinking, oh yeah, we've got a mid-table team at home, you know, just had a good performance. Now's the chance to carry that on. And obviously we didn't carry that on. Now we go to a team who have not scored in three games. They've lost 6-0 to Watford on the weekend, 5 defeats in a row, basically killing their playoff hopes. This is the ideal time to play them. It's going to go wrong, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's surely got to be a Reading win, hasn't it? I mean, look, as I say, I mean, I suppose it can almost go one of two ways for Bristol City in the fact that either they, you know, sort of have a big response from that defeat to Watford, and they sort of prove doubters wrong and sort of come back firing, or hopefully they sort of, you know, go into their shells and it's a fairly easy Reading win. Yeah, I mean, look, their form has been shocking to say the least. You know, since December the 1st, only Birmingham and Wickham have picked up fewer points in the Championship than them, as you say. Five successive defeats in all competitions. You know, they're in horrific form. I think some people are probably surprised that Dean Holden is still in charge. So it is, I suppose, the ideal time to play them. There's always that, you know, niggling thought in the back of your mind that what if they do sort of come out. But there's not an awful lot really sort of in that Bristol City side that particularly scares me. I've just seen that Alfie Mawson, the centre-back on loan from Fulham, he's out for the season. Only three sides in the division needed more goals than them as well. So, yeah, obviously they've got Naki Wells, who always seems to score against us, which I actually looked up the other day. Actually, I think, let me find it. In the 21st century, only Andy Johnson, who's got 8 goals, has scored more goals against Reading than Naki Wells, who's got 7. Cameron Jerome, Dimitar Berbatov and Lee Tomlin are also all on 7 goals. So I suppose Naki Wells is almost destined to score against us. So
I didn't realise we were playing Dimitar Berbatov that often.
No, I'm trying to think back to the Premier League, whether he scored a hat-trick against us or something. Or
yeah, that's all. That's Fulham 2012-13. Yeah. I know he got a few, didn't he?
Yeah, so I'd imagine Naki Wells will score. But yeah, I'd hope it is a Reading win. But I suppose after the weekend, we can't really sort of sound too confident.
No, well, that's the thing, isn't it? And I think what is going to be key to Reading, you know, you would think that Reading's ability to bounce back from a disappointing late defeat against Millwall is better than Bristol City's ability to bounce back from a really disappointing defeat against a Watford side, who are obviously pretty decent. So you hope that we'd have the mentality edge. In terms of the physicality, you've got to hope that Paunovic is able to produce some decent rotation in there. Obviously, the sort of players that, you know, we talked about Luko, he's someone that I would like to see brought in. I wouldn't say that it's right to bring in Sam Baldock or really change. You'd probably change the defence. You'd probably have Omar Richards coming back in. If it's Yeardom or Holmes, maybe, as I said earlier, put Yeardom on the right wing. Do it that way. Maybe give Elise a rest or give Ajari a rest. I just think we need something, 3 or 4, you know, changes to just get a bit of fresh legs back in. Because if you look at the fixtures that are coming up, it doesn't slow down from here. We've got Middlesbrough on the weekend, then we've got Wickham on a midweek, then a trip to Rotherham. So Reading have to find a way to massage their players through this. And this is a good time after a defeat, I think, to change 2 or 3 players.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the fixtures now, and I think we've only got one sort of free week without a midweek game until Easter. So the games are coming thick and fast, but then, you know, as I said, we've spoken about it earlier, that sort of Paunovic's options are quite limited, and he doesn't seem to perhaps have that trust in the academy to play them in a league game. I wouldn't be surprised to see Shaun Iluko come in, Richards will probably come back in at left back, but sort of looking at the suspension, based off the fact that probably sort of no injured players are going to be back fit for Tuesday. You know, you look at the subs bench for the Millwall game. You know, Thomas Estevez, you know, probably, as you said, it's going to be Tom Holmes or Andy Yeardom at right back. Richards will come back in. Sam Baldock might come in for Zhao, but that seems pretty unlikely. Andy Yeardom, we mentioned. Shani Lucas, I say, will probably come in. And then Tetek, Onan and Kamara. And I can't see Paunovic going with any of them. So it probably is going to be a pretty similar side. And, you know, hopefully sort of they're not too fatigued. But yeah, I'd agree. I would be averse to, you know, maybe seeing a Dejan Tetek in that holding role. But it's a tough one, as I say. The games are coming thick and fast now, and really we've just got to sort of hope that these injured players come back, because this squad is going to be massively, massively stretched now over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, let's talk predictions then to round off the show. We all got defeats in the Brentford game. We all then said we're going to beat Millwall. Probably should have realised that was foreshadowing a defeat. I don't know if anyone remembers specifically from the podcast last week when I said that we'll probably be 2-1 down to Brentford in the last 10 minutes and then concede late on. So I did actually get 3-1 for the Brentford game. So I've taken the lead in the podcast league over Handbags. 22 points myself, Handbags 21, Westy 18, Ollie on 15, and then Sim 14. So for Bristol City, I am going to go for a 2-1 Reading win. I hope that there's a bounce back, and I can certainly see a couple of quick goals in the first half and then kind of settling into the rhythm that a lot of games have gone into. Maybe keep backs against the wall, maybe a late consolation going in to keep things nervy. But yeah, I'm backing us for a win on Tuesday night. What are you going to say, Ollie?
Yeah, I'm going to go for the same, I think. I will point out that Bristol City, I've just looked now, have won 4 of their last 6 home games. Despite their recent bad form, they still seem to be pretty good at home. But yeah, I'm kind of hoping go into their shell after that defeat to Watford, and sort of, I mean, they're 13th now and 7 points off 6. So I'm hoping sort of they sort of collapse altogether and completely fall out of the playoff picture. But I am going to say 1-0 to Reading, I think.
Yeah, we're in that kind of sink or swim stage of the season now, with the run-in almost upon us. You are in that sense that teams who are on a dodgy run, such as ourselves and Bristol City, you're either going to turn it round and have a relatively strong end to the season, or you just, it's kind of like the chaos matrix that it just spirals and snowballs out of control and falls to pieces. And you're maybe going to see one team on this Tuesday night game pick that as their option, and hopefully it's not going to be Reading. I think that, you know, ultimately that Millwall game, a couple of lucky bounces of the ball go a different way, and we might well have been spent the last hour or so talking about a 1-0 win. So that's how it is. But as I say, 7:45 PM on Tuesday night away to Bristol City, and then we will have the Middlesbrough game on the 20th. We'll be back after that. So thank you very much for listening to this edition of the Tireless Den podcast. Ollie, thank you very much for popping by.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
And as I say, we'll be back after that Middlesbrough game. We didn't perhaps foresee 2 defeats this week, but we've got 2 more games to bounce back and just confirm that Reading are a fully bona fide playoff team with the ambitions that we're all dreaming of with Bristol City and Middlesbrough coming up. Here's to another 3 points and maybe even 6 for the Royals in the 7 days ahead. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening, and come on, you arse.
Just stop.